Once I see that the device works properly, they'll release me.
I very much doubt it. You see, before you reactivated it, I reversed the polarity of the neutron flow.
You realize what will happen?
Oh, yes. Do you? Reverse the polarity of the neutron flow, so the TARDIS should be free of the force field now.
So he's reversed the polarity! Keep back!
Hello and welcome to another episode of Reversing Polarity, a very queer Doctor Who podcast where we haven't got many dom or sub jokes in for this episode, The Dominators.
No.
That's the best I can do today. I'm very sorry. I'm letting the team down.
Reversing Polarity, where we command the Quarks to drill deep beneath the crust of Doctor Who to find the...
Go on, can you get anywhere?
As much gay content as possible. I was going to say...
The drilling must continue.
Like gay-dioactive material? It doesn't work.
Okay. I don't know, because nobody seems to want the radioactive material.
Yeah. I don't know if you can tell, listeners, but neither of us were, like, super into this cereal. Which, speaking of, which cereal did we watch this week?
Oh, do we want to introduce ourselves as well? Hello,
oh,
I'm Aiden. My pronouns are they, them.
My name's Rosie. My pronouns are also they, them. And we forgot how to podcast normally, because we've recorded two special episodes recently.
Yep, we saw each other in the flesh, and I think it's just thrown everything off. The vibe is very different.
I had to keep looking away while Aiden was speaking, because it was so strange seeing the voice come out of a face.
I love how normal our friendship is.
Yeah, it's very, very normal. Very, very,
very normal.
Average.
Yep. We're talking about The Dominators today, which is also fairly average, I'd say.
Yes, season 6, serial 1. It is the second Zoe serial, and I do love Zoe. So
she's so small.
I know. I want to put her in my pocket.
I wonder to what extent was she cast because she made Troughton and Hines look taller.
I think that's
which is also great, but from like a aesthetic perspective.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's a short TARDIS team, and I love it.
Yeah, I had not seen this one before. I always forget it exists when I'm like trying to list Patrick Troughton serials. I just forget that this one happens, and I don't know why.
Yeah, I'd also not seen it before. Joel was like, oh, that's a good one, so I may have to have words with him later.
Maybe he remembers the good bits, because there are good
bits.
There
are some really good bits in there.
The problem is that it's sandwiched with so much nothing.
Yeah, there's a lot of dead air between the good.
And to think it was supposed to be 6 episodes instead of 5. Yeah. Is that Joel?
Is it Joel?
There's someone talking in the background.
Yeah, I've got noise cancelling headphones on.
Yeah, let me grab the keys. I can just hear Joel in the background. I think he's talking about keys.
Yeah. Well.
Hi, Joel.
Have fun. Again, noise cancelling headphones.
I know, but it was worth a try.
Okay. I'll pass it on.
Yeah, it's as I said to Aim, this is a great serial to watch while you are reattaching the inlet pipe of a washing machine.
Which I think that's a sort of niche list that will exist on Letterboxd.
Exactly. Like on that list, there would be like Extro, because it doesn't make any sense even if you are watching it. For some reason, Extro was the first one I thought of, which is a movie in which a woman gives birth to a full-grown man.
Thank you. I just saw my entire life flash in front of my eyes.
That's not even the worst bit. The worst bit for me is the bit where an action man grows to life size and then walks around killing people. It makes me very scared. Just very scared to look at.
That's horrible.
Yeah.
What else would be on that list? I'd probably put some, like, season 4 friends on there.
Why season
4?
Are Ross and Rachel broken up at that point?
They're broken up at that point.
Oh,
it's not
God.
It's not friends at its best, but it's not friends at its worst. It's just... fine.
I will consult with Sam on that. I haven't watched very much Friends.
I watched it a lot when I was a teenager, and I've retained all of the knowledge.
Yeah, that seems to be about par for the course for everyone, whereas I was watching, like, fucking all 11 seasons of MASH in a fortnight.
You're so consistent.
I am. For the listeners, this week I watched all 3 extant seasons of Star Trek Discovery in 3 days, and... I enjoyed it very much, but I'm trying not to info dump about it quite so much.
I mean, you're the one who gets to edit the podcast. If you want to, you can just cut it out.
It's okay. I'm also with Sam, we're now watching Ted Lasso, which I've just rambled to aim about off podcast. So, you know, I'm not going to dump as much as I did about NBC Transplant.
Which still sounds wild to me.
Yeah, it's interesting. And season two, probably soon, you know. But before we talk about any of that, maybe we should move on to the synopsis.
Let's go. Let's go and have a nice little holiday when nothing bad will happen.
Yes, absolutely. So, when two belligerent dominators and their robotic servant quarks land on the peaceful planet Dulcis, planning to drop a radioactive seed into the planet's core to refuel their spaceship, the Second Doctor, Jamie and Zoe must attempt to inspire the pacifist Dulcians to resist. Every pronunciation of every word in this serial made me very happy. Just everyone saying robots.
Yeah, that's what they are. Robots.
It gives me the same happy brain feeling as when Spock says sensors. You know?
Sensors.
Yeah.
You need to watch Lower Decks.
I know. I did open it up yesterday and then we ended up watching Ted Lasso instead. So
that's fair.
One day.
That's
I'm thinking. I might be able to get Sam into Star Trek with Lower Decks. I'm really hopeful.
It's a very, very good gateway drug.
Yeah, I've made her watch Mirror Mirror and Amok Time before, and she didn't hate them, but they were, again, TOS has very long episodes. Like, I watched Journey to Babel yesterday while I was ironing. I was like, this is so long. And I love Journey to Babel. DC Fontana can do no wrong in my eyes.
She's my favourite.
She's great. Like, the power of writing the only canon episode of the animated series. It, like, you know, she's got it going. How's Voyager going, by the way?
Oh, we finished Voyager ages ago.
Oh, shit. Which one are you watching alone? Enterprise,
We finished Enterprise. So we did DS9, Voyager, Enterprise, TOS, TAS, and now we're on season two of TNG.
Oh, TNG. I went through all the tracks. I don't know if you can tell listeners, but...
We used a skip list for DS9 and Voyager, so we're going to have to go back and watch the skipped episodes. Because
was that like watched the plot important ones? Or...
Yeah, basically.
Don't watch Prophet and Lace or Time's Orphan. They are very bad.
But I have to now.
Prophet and Lace is just like viciously transphobic, and then Time's Orphan is just...
Oh, I have watched that one. Yeah, I did watch that, and I was like, oh no.
At least I'm assuming you've seen Move Along Home, right?
Of course I've seen... Joel omitted that in our original watch through, and then I decided I needed some comfort DS9 earlier this year, and I watched it, and I was like, this is the most perfect bit of television I've ever seen.
Alan Moraine.
So good. I might make us watch that tonight, actually.
Can Discovery do a sequel to it, please? I'm begging.
Oh my god, please.
Big board game energy. We know that they like Dungeons & Dragons, that cast. They would love to play a big board game.
You say big board game, I say big escape room.
Oh my god.
Okay, a Move Along Home escape room.
No, I love it, and we need to plan this on our escape room Star Trek podcast that we clearly need to start, but we need to talk about the Dominators.
Okay, episode one, let me put my tea down.
Yeah, the premise is fine, it's just boring. Anyway...
Episode one, a Dominator spacecraft lands on an island on the planet Dulcis. It absorbs the radiation of the island into its power reserves. The two Dominators, Navigator Rago and Probationer Toba, step out of the craft. Rago calls some quarks off to survey the land.
Quarks! Meanwhile... We don't actually see the quarks for fucking ages.
No,
it's supposed to be like a
reveal. The reveal is beautiful.
It's so fun. Rago and Toba, would you like to paint a word picture of what they look like?
I have a single word.
Yep.
Armadillo. They are grown men dressed as... They have, like, armour that comes up over their shoulders.
See,
and it's got, like, lines on it so it looks like an armadillo tummy. And then their arms have, like, almost shredded black sleeves on.
Yeah.
They just look like armadillos.
Oh, no, the shredded sleeves are like a full body costume. Everything. It is beautiful. And I like to imagine that what they're trying to do is imply that the Dominators have, like, the shoulders are where their actual shoulders are. Like... Their heads are actually way further down. I like that as an image. I think that would be fun.
That would be even more like an armadillo. I love it.
I don't know that that's intentional, but that's what I'm taking from it because, you know, I'm sick of the forehead aliens. I want people to have different body shapes.
Meanwhile, a Dulcian sea craft arrives at the island for an unauthorized trip. It's piloted by Cully, the son of Director Senex, a high-ranking member of the Dulcian Council. The passengers include three Dulcians who think Cully has conned them when they found out there is no radiation on the island. As the passengers argue, Cully takes his eyes off the controls and they crash, becoming stuck on the island. The three Daltians disembark and soon see Toga, Vrago, and some new type of robots.
Robots.
I apologise.
Robots. No, I love this introduction to the Daltians. I think that episode one is actually quite good in that it kind of sets everything up. And also, the costuming for the Daltians is impeccable.
It's like Grecian dresses, but short, but made out of jersey, but on the men.
Yeah, it's like a toga, but they've sort of sewn that, or like, I'm trying to think of what it looks like specifically to me, because it's kind of like they've taken a big napkin and they've tied a ribbon around the middle, and like they've wrapped it around their chest and they've tied a ribbon around the middle, and then they've sewn the top of that napkin to like a nude coloured vest.
Yeah, for some reason.
And then the women are wearing mini dresses, but with an empire waistline, which is like fucking genius costume design, and I love it.
So the what was her name? There was a woman on board.
Talana?
She was very pretty. Talata.
Talata.
Apparently, in order to get more into character, she also took her shoes off to give her character a bit of je ne sais quoi. But they never included any feet in the shots.
Oh no! What's Wiki Feet gonna do? What's Wiki Feet gonna do?
Time travel.
I liked Talata for the like 2 seconds she was on screen. I was like, oh, a woman. And then then they immediately died. And I was like, oh, red shirts on Doctor Who.
Well, she was very pretty. And I was gearing up for a chunky Wife City segment. And then she died.
Cully looked faintly familiar to me. And it turns out that he has been in something I know about. But I'm saving that for 6 degrees.
Toba is ordering the Quarks and sees three Daltians approach. He commands the Quarks to kill them and they obey. Vrago hears this and admonishes Toba.
Yeah, Vrago is very much of the get the job done variety of colonialist. And
Toba is of the, yes,
and kill
the
natives. Yes.
And a bit of death,
genocide. Peace? Genocide, basically. Yeah. He's like, anyone who crosses us will be killed immediately as a show of power. And Vrago is like, we don't have the power yet. We haven't irradiated the planet.
And Toba is like, well, that's not my problem, is it? Let me kill them.
It's intriguing.
Yeah. And now finally the TARDIS crew land. Woo! And the Doctor assumes they're in for a nice holiday, having visited peaceful Dulcis before. While the Doctor relaxes in the deck chair, Jamie blows up a beach ball.
I love this.
This is perfect television.
They get out of the TARDIS and the Doctor's like, oh, we're on Dulcis. Fantastic. And he like goes back into the TARDIS and hands out like a series of things, like a beach ball, the deck chair. Like, there's another thing he pulls out. What is it?
God.
I mean, shockingly, it's not a bucket and spade. I would have expected that. Because Zoe is like, it seems we've landed on an island surrounded by mists. And the Doctor then realises it's Dulcis and is delighted.
Perfectly splendid planet.
Yes. Splendid planet. Patrick Troughton is just delighted by everything. And it's so lovely.
Yeah.
Also,
he must have known that this was his final season by this stage.
Yeah, probably. I did notice, or not notice, but when he gets out of the TARDIS, he says, well, mental projection can be quite taxing because at the end of Wheel in Space, he mentally projects the entirety of the evil of the Daleks to Zoe to explain what the Daleks are, because they had to rerun the evil of the Daleks. I guess they haven't
had
Daleks
in
the show for
2 hours.
You're kidding
me, that's how that happened?
Yeah.
Holy shit,
you went,
that's
amazing.
Well,
I'll tell you about it. And then they fucking junked the evil of the Daleks, and it's like, come on, guys. Come on, you showed it twice and you couldn't keep it for a little bit longer.
That's actually quite powerful.
But, you know, people could have seen that one twice before they started, you know, re-airing Doctor Who in the 80s or whatever, I don't remember.
Also, just the image of Jamie blowing up a beach ball is everything.
It's so funny. It's so funny.
So good.
I love how much the two just frolics on beaches. He does it in Fury. He does it in Enemy of the World, I think. Like, he just enjoys the beach.
He just wants a little holiday.
He just wants a little holiday as a treat.
I frolicked on a beach recently and I can recommend it.
Very nice.
It's nice.
Very nice.
Right. Cully, the only surviving member of the party, returns to his craft. As he approaches, Toba orders the Quarks to destroy it.
Yeah, they've got this kind of, like, dome-shaped capsule.
It looks kind of like a part hot air balloon to me somehow.
Yeah.
That's
Because he crashes it onto the island because he's distracted by the fact that the radiation readings are at zero, because it's supposed to be highly irradiated after the planet's only atomic bomb test 175 years ago or something. But it's not. Ooh.
The Doctor, Jamie and Zoe follow the sound and find a burnt out shell. However, it's been this way for many years. They discover it's a war museum. Zoe
Which
asks
is an immediate conjecture by the Doctor. Nothing about it says war museum anywhere on the walls. It could just be an old room.
Maybe it's like a psychic war museum.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, I guess he's been in a lot of museums in life. Like, they were in a museum, like, last series. Or wait, is the Seeds of Death after this? No, it is after this, isn't it? They go to multiple museums this series.
Educational Doctor Who. Spend time in museums.
Yeah.
Zoe asks the Doctor if he checked the radiation levels before they left the TARDIS. They turn to be met by three suited figures.
I love these radiation suits. They are just covered in, like, polystyrene sauces.
It's one way to keep the radiation at bay.
Yeah. Just be so unfashionable that it turns its nose up at you and leaves.
In a large building, Educator Balin... Balin. I'm going with Balin.
Balin or something. It doesn't matter.
And his two students, Kando and Teal, try to decontaminate the Doctor, Jamie and Zoe. To their surprise, they find the radiation is already at zero. The Doctor candidly explains that they are travellers through space, which Balin accepts in a really great scene where the Doctor's obviously expecting him to recoil and be like, what? How? What? And that makes sense.
Yeah, no, he's like, yeah, that makes Very sense good. Why you wouldn't know. And it's like, okay.
Cool. Because, love that.
It's kind of a fun subversion of the usual thing.
Yeah. Kando tells them that the only nuclear blast on the island was an experiment some 172 years ago. However, why there's no radiation is a mystery.
Kando is the other woman in the serial. There's two women. And I do like her. She doesn't get a lot to do. She mostly just kind of stands around making commentary. But, you know, she's pretty. She's recalling things that she was taught. Although I do think that Balin prompts her too much. Like, you shouldn't
I thought that was hilarious.
You shouldn't be teaching children to parrot things. You should be teaching them the information so that they can recall it in their own words.
This was the 1960s.
I know it was the 1960s, but it's Dulcis. Can't they... Like, they've been pacifists for 172 years. Can't they improve their education system, honestly?
Probably.
Guys?
Apparently they like perfected that in the original script she was just going to recite it parrot like.
Oh right.
And then in rehearsals they were like, this is really boring. Let's have her forget it and be prompting.
Wow, they noticed something about the serial was boring. That's so interesting.
And did something about it.
Wow.
Right. Toba and Rago argue about Toba's bloodthirsty ways. Toba informs Rago that the Quarks have marked out their site for the drilling. Teal is out examining the museum when he encounters Cully, who he knows from the mainland. Cully
They're
demands
boyfriends.
To be taken to...
There's no evidence of that. I just wanted to...
However, we'll take it. We will take anything.
We will take anything.
Cully demands to be taken to the survey team. As Teal and Cully leave, Rago and Toba examine the museum. Rago sees the weapons and assumes the Dulcians must have more sophisticated weapons now. He is eager to go on a war footing, because he fucking is.
Sorry, Balin's I just scrolled down and seen how long the fucking episode 5 summary is.
I tried to cut it, I just got bored.
We'll just have to skip full paragraphs when we're reading it. Who cares? Who cares about the Dominators? Not me.
Patrick Troughton.
Yeah.
He'll haunt you. You're going to get haunted, babe.
He was in it. He's allowed to care about it.
Balin suspects that the TARDIS might have absorbed the radiation, something the Doctor poo-poos. I loved the wording of that.
Thanks, TARDIS Wiki.
Teal returns with Cully. Cully explains what's going on outside with Rago, Toba, and the robots. Balin starts to think that Cully is playing a joke and that the Doctor and his colleagues are in on it, too. It's revealed that Cully is the son of the director, Senex, and is also a bit of a hellraiser. Mm. Balin refuses to believe Cully. The Doctor inquires about the people's ship. He says he's seen a round one and a square one, the TARDIS that the men were out examining is going to destroy. The Doctor and Jamie rush out. Balin refuses to believe Cully and wants to report to Senex before he does anything, but the robots outside are blocking communications. Cully speaks to Zoe. He is infuriated by the slow-witted attitude of the Dulcian people, including his father.
Here we begin the violence is good, actually, thread of this serial, which only grows over the course of the story.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Does have some fun moments in, though.
Yeah.
The Doctor and Jamie make it to the TARDIS and are relieved to see that it's fine.
Woo!
The Doctor finds the marks on the ground that signal the site is soon to be used for drilling. They discover the ship and set out exploring it. Jamie soon shouts for the Doctor's attention. Up on top of a peak stand two robots with rectangular bodies and circular heads.
Yay!
The Quarks!
Oh my god, I love
that.
That's
so fucking good. As Raga joins the Quarks, they ask him, "Shall we destroy?
Shall we destroy?" It's great. It's so good. The voice actress is wonderful.
Sheila Grant, I want to say.
Yes, and I love that we get a woman voicing a robot. Like, it just doesn't happen very often.
It's good, actually. They're just so little, like, and here's one I made earlier style robots as well. Cardboard box tinfoil.
And they have
legs. They're so good.
It's people in the suits and they're walking around with the little bendy legs.
They were children from a local acting school.
Oh my god.
Yep.
I love it. I love it.
Yep. So yeah, the Quarks are great.
Yeah. This episode is probably the best
It's downhill from here.
Yeah, it's downhill and then uphill in episode 5, but only a little bit uphill. We never get quite to the heights, you know, it's like the Grand Old Duke of York had 10,000 Quarks. Marched their lot to the top of the hill and they fell down again.
Because they are robots and
because
they don't
have... Because they're robots. They can't climb the hill, I hope, says Jamie McCrimmon.
Do you want to try that again in the Jamie voice?
Oh god. They can't climb the hill. They can't climb the hill. I think.
They can't climb the hill.
A hill? I'll work on my Jamie. Episode 2. The Quarks manhandle the Doctor and Jamie into their ship. Jamie tries to stand up for himself, but both he and the Doctor are magnetised to a wall using molecular force binding. I love the magnetising. I love it. It's not magnets. It's not...
it's magnet-esque.
Huh?
Magnet-esque.
Magnet-esque, yes. There is an attraction between atoms, but unfortunately, unless they've literally ionised Jamie and the Doctor, which would be radioactive of them, if you think about it.
True.
But yeah, so they get stuck to this wall. The Dominators tell them that they intend to probe their physiological makeup. Oh, do they?
Well,
the wall Jamie is attached to becomes a table and he is examined. They decide not to examine the Doctor, assuming that he will be the same as Jamie, more full them, I suppose. Rago wants to destroy them, but Toba wants to keep them for slave labour, allowing the Quarks to recharge. Yeah, there's this whole thing about the Quarks having very low power, which I guess is like...
That's how I feel most days.
Yeah, they should just get some solar panels on them, you know? We're getting solar panels later in the season, so like, why not now?
Why not? They're on an island. It's renewable energy. Let's get on that.
Yeah, although I guess Rago and Toba don't really care about renewable energy, given that they're destroying planets.
Maybe they want to be eco-friendly when destroying planets.
Maybe. Probably not. Yeah. Balin tries to contact Senex, but the line is still bad. Senex says he will examine the strangers in the capital. The Doctor overhears Rago and Toba talking about an intelligence test and isn't sure whether the desired result is intelligence or stupidity. Later in the season, we also have the Crotons. And I feel like the Crotons also has an intelligence test segment. Like,
what's that up to at the time?
I think because they have Zoe and the Doctor, they're trying to make the whole intelligence of the Doctor a more central force in the show.
That makes sense.
By having him kind of be cunning and outwit the enemies. Obviously, one did it as well, but he was more of a, I am so smart, ah, ha, ha, ha. Whereas two tries to keep it more under wraps.
Two tries to be silly, grumpy man.
Yes.
You would never see it coming, crap.
Yes, he's got the silly-ass persona down pat, which is why he and Lord Peter Wimsey will be friends. Anyway, excuse me. Zoe and Cully interrupt the meeting of the Dulcian Council being chaired by Bovan. Cully wants to share his news from the island and introduces Zoe as someone from another planet. He is met with scorn by the councillors, who seem to think that aliens don't exist.
Which is actually genius. Really good.
It's really good, yeah.
I love that they put that in here.
Yeah,
it's lots of nice little moments.
It's pre-first contact. They are not a member of the Federation.
And I think they'd have to do quite a lot of work if they wanted entry to the Federation as well.
Yes. Sanix clears the room to talk to Cully and Zoe's privately. Sanix assumes that Zoe must have been part of one of Cully's illegal tours. Zoe sticks up for Cully and tells Sanix about the TARDIS. Sanix still thinks it's a joke. Cully tells Sanix about all the things he's seen on the island, including the Dominators and the Quarks. Sanix asks Zoe if she's seen these things, and she confesses that she hasn't, which is the time to lie, Zoe. It's the time to lie your ass off. Come on.
Hey,
man.
It's her second story.
I know, it makes sense, but still. Well, I haven't actually seen them, and it's like, Zoe! But I have met Cybermen before. That would have been good. Toba sets up a very simple puzzle-solving task for the Doctor. The Doctor's hands are placed in a box, blah, 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 blah. And essentially he just fails to do the puzzle, even while Jamie is like, Doctor, no, the star shape goes in the star hole. It's very fun. Basically, I'm just going to summarise this, but they have to do two tests and they just deliberately fail at them until Toba and Raga were like, oh, okay, all the Dulcians are this stupid then. Fine, we're going to enslave them. Rago enters and says he will take over the testing, as he believes that people like this couldn't have built the weaponry they saw in the museum, and he also sends a message out that the material is readily accessible.
But what does that mean?
Yeah, I do like the bit where they have to jump over the floor and to immediately hold hands with Jamie, even though they don't have to.
No, they absolutely do have to.
Okay, they don't objectively have to, but subjectively, they definitely have
emotionally,
to.
Emotionally,
they have to. Kanda wonders where the Doctor and Jamie are, while Teal shows Baylan that the radiation has dropped to zero. Baylan assumes that this means that radiation is only present in the atmosphere for 172 years. Isn't this guy meant to be an atomic scientist, LMAO? Like, my dude.
That's how it works.
Does this man know what a half-life is?
Yeah, and it will take 170 years for it to no longer be present in the system, because that's the length of the half. I am not a science.
Well, the half-life is the time it takes for half of the mass of the radioactive substance to decay. So there's still half left.
No, unless half...
It would still be radioactive.
Unless the half-life was significantly shorter, and that's how long it takes for enough of the half-life pass again and again and again.
Okay, so they've done one atomic test ever. And they went out, like, they go out regularly, including presumably very recently, because apparently they do these trips all the time. And they haven't seen any decline in radioactivity until now. And he's like, oh, okay, I guess it just all goes away at once. And then he says, we don't need to perform any tests. It's a fact.
Oh, it's 2021 science.
I hate him. Rago has taken the Doctor and Jamie to the old museum and shows them the gun. He asks the Doctor to identify and fire it. He plays dumb, and Jamie does the same. It's so funny. He's like, well, you put something in the back here, and then it comes out the front. I don't know. And then Jamie takes it and is like, oh, yeah, well, yeah, you put the prop in the top here, and It's very good. Rago fires the gun inches from the Doctor's head and orders him to tell them how these weapons came about. The Doctor states that the clever ones invented the guns, and that they don't like the clever ones as they boss them about. This explanation satisfies the Dominators. Toba wants to destroy them, but Rago sets them free on the proviso they keep out of the way.
Which is very nice of him.
Is it?
Well, not killing them.
He's going to kill them when he blows up the planet, Abe.
But he's going to let them live first.
Okay. Would you rather die quickly of being shot by a laser gun or slowly of being irradiated by lava?
See, when you put it like that.
It's a really hard choice, isn't it?
I'd rather not die.
Yeah, no, I get that.
Yeah.
Cully and Zoe decide they should go back to the island to gather more evidence. Cully is worried about Zoe's clothes being too conspicuous, so they go to the clothing dispenser unit in his father's quarters in order to get her some Dulcian clothing. This is also very good.
Always love this. MLM. Always love anybody wearing contemporary alien wear.
Yes,
it's good.
It's Mlem Wulau solidarity. That's not how I say it. I just think it's funny to say it that way.
Mlem.
Zoe is a lesbian. I think we can agree about this.
Oh, that's canon. That's basically canon. Yeah.
The Doctor and Jamie, having returned to the research centre, are bundled into a pod and are off to the capital. They have told the team about the Dominators and the Quarks, though. Baylan does not believe them, but Kando and Teal are unsure. They share their doubts with Baylan, but he takes them out to look, certain that nothing is there. This is very silly of him as well. He's just... He's very silly. He's not very scientific about all of this. He just goes, oh, well, I know what's going on. I don't need to test any of it.
Yeah, which is one way to do science, but also another way to die.
Yeah, yeah. Zoe, now in Dulcian garb, heads off to the capsule with Cully. It's, again, we've mentioned these dresses with the Empire waistline and, like, it goes
absolutely
down to just,
above,
just below her ass. It's a very cute dress. I want one. I want one quite badly.
You can make one.
I can
Nothing
make one,
you.
And I will. I just need to get some tulle or something, you know, make a petticoat. Yeah. The Quark see Balin, Kando, and Teal approaching and warn the Dominators. Toba wants to destroy the Dulcians, but Rago decides they should investigate. Outside, the research team marvel at the craft. Balin still doubts Cully's version of events. Kando wants to investigate, and Balin agrees. As they explore the ship, the Quarks round on them. Balin is paralysed with a blast from the Quark's gun. They use their molecular force binder to examine Teal in the same way as they did Jamie earlier. They discover greater brain power than that of Jamie and two hearts. Oh yeah, they... When they analysed Jamie's brain, they were like, it seems to be rather simple, but there is evidence of recent rapid learning. And I'm like, hell yeah!
He's smart! This is our boy! He's developing!
Yes. obviously, concepts of intelligence being linked to, like, actual structure of the brain is kind of iffy.
Bad, actually.
But it's being done by the Dominators, so, you know, we can just ignore
Allow
it.
Allow that
it
to be part
anything.
Of their awfulness.
Yeah, exactly.
It just adds to it.
Also, I like that they have two hearts, because it makes me wonder if they're somehow Gallifrey-related.
I did have to do a quick Google of when was it established that the Doctor had two hearts.
Spearhead for space.
Yep.
The Dominators...
Why did I Google it when I could have asked you?
Well, we've said it on the podcast before, I think.
I know.
The Dominators still don't see the Dulcians as a threat. I don't expect you to remember things, babe. Don't worry. The variances bear up with the Doctor's statement that there are two different species on the planet. The Dominators head out to search for more Dulcians, hoping to build a slave labour force. Cully and Zoe begin the descent to the island. The Quarks have infiltrated the research centre and are recording their data. Cully and Zoe alight from the capsule to find the research centre abandoned. Outside... Wait, hang on. These three sentences don't make sense together. Quarks infiltrate it, then Cully and Zoe find it abandoned, and then the Quarks go there again.
I mean, maybe they did.
I don't know. Toba orders its destruction. As the bombardment begins to destroy the building, Cully and Zoe try to escape, but they're trapped. Zoe screams as the building starts to come down around her ears, and this is when I started to reattach the drain, the inlet hose of my washing machine.
I mean... It's much slower than episode one.
Yeah.
But it is a good cliffhanger.
Yeah. I just don't have much to say. Let's get on with it.
Okay, all right, episode three. Rango orders Toba to stop the destruction. Cully suspects that the destruction has been brought about by the robots.
Who would have guessed?
Rago orders that what is left of the research centre be searched and that any survivors are brought to him. Cully and Zoe can't open the door. Zoe suggests that they use the capsule, but Cully says the robots will easily pick them off in flight. The door opens and a Quark enters.
Yay!
As if it's a friend?
I just like them.
It's fair, they're very good.
They're friend-shaped.
like a box.
Yeah! I like to sit in boxes, and therefore boxes are my friend. You saw the picture on Twitter of me as a baby sat in a box.
I did.
It was very cute because I'm fucking adorable.
Yes, it was. please don't sit inside a robot. It might kill you. At the Capitol, Bovum shows Jamie and the Doctor in. They are told that Zoe is no longer there and that Senex will explain further. Toba has brought Cully and Zoe for examination. Rago has found intelligence in his examination of Teal and now wants to test their physical abilities. Rago orders that the Quarks go to the research centre to keep an eye on any new arrivals. Senex tells Jamie and the Doctor that Zoe has returned to the island. Jamie wants to go back with weapons, only to be told that the Dulcians have none because they're pacifists. Senex observes that Jamie's lack of understanding of the Dulcian ways backs up Cully's story of them being from another planet. And the Doctor confirms all that Cully has said.
The story basically implies that being pacifist is like some kind of naive approach to the universe.
Yeah.
And it's like, guys...
That's also quite a naive approach to pacifism.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Cully and Zoe are held captive by a circle of Quarks, but Zoe has a plan to escape.
Yay! I love her.
Rago sends... She's very good. Rago sends Balin, Kando, and Teal to Zoe and Cully to begin their testing. Toba wants permission to destroy any escapees, but Rago denies this. Back in the capital, the Doctor has recounted his story to Senex and the Council. The Doctor implores Senex to send someone to verify the story. Senex is very passive, refusing to see the Dominators as a threat. They're called the fucking Dominators.
I know, oh my god.
It's like showing up being like, hello, I am Mr. Exploitative.
I am the fascist. To be fair, they did have that...
Probably a nice guy.
To be fair, they did have that cancelled serial, The Nazis, so, you know.
I'm really glad that didn't get made. Yeah. I don't think it would have been good.
It would not.
No. So they're not seeing the Dominators as a threat, citing the fact that they let the Doctor and Jamie go peacefully as a reason to remain unconcerned. Mm. The Doctor suggests that Senex contact Balin to obtain more news. When he does, they see the destruction of the research centre with a Quark standing in the rubble. Iconic. The Doctor and Jamie rush off. It's not until they are in the capsule heading to the island that Jamie reminds the Doctor that they are heading precisely to the building where the Quark awaits them. God, it's good.
So good. God.
There's you on.
Yeah, right? I'm good.
Meanwhile on the island, Toba explains the task he expects his captives to complete. They are to clear the drilling site of any rocks or debris. If they refuse, they will be destroyed. Zoe and Cully plan their escape. Balin and Kando are reluctant while Teal is unsure. The Doctor starts to deconstruct the capsule. He is forced to go right into the nose of the machine.
Ooh.
A Quark reports back to Rago saying that all of the work party are fine apart from one female. Rago orders the Quark to keep on working with them until they're all exhausted.
Bless you.
Sorry.
It's catching, obviously.
It is, yep. Zoe explains that they are right by the museum in which there is a laser gun. If they could get the gun, they could destroy the Quarks and escape. As they talk, Balin collapses. No! The Quarks order the others to continue working while Zoe takes Balin off to sit by the side. She tries to sneak into the museum but sees a Quark in the building and slips away. In the capsule, the Doctor thinks he's done it. He tries to direct the capsule and it wildly lurches to one side.
Oh no!
Who could have thought that the man who can't pilot a TARDIS can't pilot a capsule? Senex and his council have sent for Tensa, the chairman of the emergency committee. He's decided that if the Dominators are aggressive, the Dulcians have three options: fight, submit, or flee. All three of these prove unacceptable to the council, so they pick a fourth option: wait. Ugh, what sort of government would ever choose that?
It's such a mystery.
The Doctor and Jamie have landed undetected and go off in search of Zoe. Cully and Zoe conspire. Teal tells them that there's a bomb shelter nearby where they can hide if they escape. High above the pit, the Doctor and Jamie overlook the proceedings. They decide to split up to go round the back. Zoe and Cully decide to put their plan into action. Cully fakes an injury. The Quark send him to where the other exhaustive captives have gone. He sneaks away into the museum and gets the gun. On cue, Zoe pretends to faint. The Quarks gather around her. Cully lines up the shot. However, before he can fire, Jamie comes up behind him and stops him, not understanding what's going on. By the time Cully lines the shot up again, it's too late. With all the captives exhausted, the Quarks lead them back to the Dominator ship. They realise Cully is missing.
This was around the time that I was emptying the dishwasher, I think.
Oh boy. I'm glad that very important information is now on the record.
Yeah, it's preserved. I just want to update people as to how I was doing while I was watching the serial this morning. I woke up at like half nine and I was like, oh fuck, I gotta watch the Dominators. Put it on, I watched the first two episodes in bed and I was like, shit, I need to go and reconnect the washing machine hose. And then while I was in the kitchen, I was like, well, I may as well do some tidying up and some washing up while I'm watching the Dominators.
That's fair.
It's
That's
not
fair.
Compelling television.
I don't even know what I was distracted by at this point, but I had zoned out.
That is valid, babe.
Yeah. The Doctor is discovered by Toba. As they talk, Toba sees the returning Quarks and missing a captive. He puts the Doctor in amongst the prisoners and goes to seek Cully out. Cully and Jamie are waiting in the museum for the Doctor. Toba turns up, Jamie grabs the gun, and Toba orders the Quarks to destroy the museum. Jamie shoots a Quark as the building falls down around him, but a beam falls on Cully.
Oh my god.
Jamie grabs him and escapes out of the museum. As the building is completely destroyed, Toba grins. Very sinister armadillo man.
Very sinister armadillo man. Both the armadillo men are pretty irredeemable, but I do think that they fuck each other, to be clear.
I mean, I think they hate fuck each other.
Yeah, oh no, absolutely. It's like... hate fuck. It's a hate fuck.
Yeah.
There is no way you can have that much passionate hatred for someone in television and not also be fucking. Obviously, in real life, I can believe it, but in television.
Television, no, they're fucking. Mm. Yep.
Yeah, I don't know.
So that's episode three.
It's boring. It's a boring episode. As you can tell by the fact that I would rather put away stuff from the dishwasher. I had to dry all of it while I was doing it as well, which is why I've been putting it off.
Hey, if this is actually getting you through your other procrastinations.
Yeah, but it's through being boring. So, like, I don't know. At least I did it. Oh, shit, I haven't logged it on Letterboxd. I'll do that later. But yeah, I don't know. It's just not...
There's a lot of back and forth and almost like too many characters who are not quite well developed enough for me to give a shit about them.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I like Cully. I like Cully and I like Kando. Cully because he's the only developed side character and Kando because she's a woman.
Our bar has to be low sometimes.
Yeah, it really does. It really does.
Do you want to take us on to episode four?
Yeah. Oh man,
Are you sure?
I don't think the Dominators is on Letterboxd.
Tragedy.
Very sad. How am I supposed to get my 200 films goal?
You could watch The Thing again.
Could watch The Thing again. I don't know if they count them more than once a year, though. Anyway, yeah, episode four.
I enjoyed it.
It was good.
It stayed with me.
I mean, I watched The Thing.
It was great.
I immediately started planning an escape room.
I have one thing, and it's wanting to leave every room.
Yeah. You got in my house, and you're immediately like, I'm going to go upstairs. Excuse me.
I'm sorry.
You shouldn't have had a bacon salad. Those two things do not go together. Right, episode four. The Quarks report the destruction of the museum to Rago, who loses his temper. Rago orders that the prisoners are to be sent to clear the site for the mining, with the exception of the inferior doctor and Zoe. Once the prisoners have gone, Rago questions Toba's service. Toba sticks up for himself, but Rago says he plans to report him to the fleet commander. Toba reports he will do the same. Rago threatens Toba with execution, calling a Quark over. Rago gives Toba two choices, molecular destruction or submission. Toba backs down. When alone with the Doctor and Zoe, Rago says that they are to be questioned about Dulcis. When Toba arrives at the drilling site, he orders Kando and Teal to continue clearing the area and leaves with Balin. Left alone, Kando and Teal wonder about the fate of Jamie and Cully. Jamie and Cully have found their way into an underground bunker. Cully wants to wait for Balin. Jamie tries the hatch, but it is blocked with debris. They realise that it is getting stuffy in the bunker. The ventilation shafts must be blocked too. They will soon run out of oxygen. Jamie realises this. He gets a lot of good smart moments this serial.
It's because his brain is getting physically bigger.
Yes, exactly. That is how intelligence works. Zoe is threatened by Rago as he demands answers from the Doctor. He wants to know about Senex and where he is based, planning to take his own ship to go and see Senex, but the Doctor tells him about the modified capsule. Rago discusses this with the fleet commander. The Doctor explains to Zoe that if Rago takes the capsule, they can investigate the ship and find Jamie. Rago returns and orders the Doctor to take him to the capsule.
Does make sense.
Yeah. I like that they split up the TARDIS team a bit, and we get different double acts going around this serial.
It would just be better if the other double acts had more going for them.
Yes. Hang on, I'm going to sneeze again.
Bless you.
I'm fine. Balin has been taken to help two Quarks with the drilling. They report that Toba has been ordered to seek Rago. Rago finds the capsule primitive but suitable. Toba arrives and Rago explains the plan. Whilst the Dominators are distracted, Zoe informs the Doctor of the underground shelter. Jamie and Cully are desperately forcing the hatch with a ladder, eventually breaking through and climbing up. They hide from the two Quarks that are guarding Teal and Kando. Jamie plans an attack.
Ooh, I love how much plotting Jamie does.
Yes, he gets to actually,
that's,
you know,
my boy.
He gets to be a Highlander, which is nice. A Quark reports to Toba that drilling is almost complete. The Doctor needs to know what they are drilling for and yearns for a diversion to allow the Quark that is guarding them to leave. Jamie, standing on a
cliff... I love the use of the word yearns.
Though. Yeah, he does yearn. Jamie, standing on a clifftop, chucks rocks at the Quark that is supervising Balin. The Quark tries to shoot
Possibly my favourite shot of the entire story.
There's a lot of quarry in episodes 4 and 5, which is always fun.
Mm.
The Quark tries to shoot Jamie but misses. Jamie runs and is pursued by the Quark. When Jamie gets into a ravine, Cully pushes a massive boulder down the steep drop and destroys the quark.
Powerful.
Very powerful. The destruction of the quark registers at the main ship. Toba runs off to investigate, accompanied by the quark that was guarding the Doctor and Zoe. The Doctor suggests that the destruction was caused by Jamie. The Doctor begins to investigate the ship, and he soon discovers it runs on radioactive material. The discovery does, however, raise the question as to what the Dominators are drilling for, as there is no radioactive material in this part of the planet. Toba questions Baylan as to who destroyed the quark. He claims to have no knowledge of the matter. Toba orders the quarks to destroy any unknown being they come across. The Dulcian Council is still discussing what to do when Rago enters. Rago starts to demand answers from Senex. Tensa stands up for him. Rago warns him to be silent. And when Tensa does not back down, Rago orders his destruction. Rago orders that all Dulcians are to be rounded up and enslaved. Those that survive will return to the Dominator's planet. He points to Tensa's death as a warning against any further outcries.
I thought I was going to sneeze again, excuse me.
Ah, that's okay. I have nothing to add at this point.
Yeah. Back on the island, Toba questions Teal and Kando. Toba grabs Kando and starts to hurt her. Teal attacks him. Toba gets a quark to torture Teal as he asks about who has been attacking them. He only stops when Kando says that she suspects the destruction was caused by Cully. Toba thinks Cully is dead, but realises that there is another one on the island. Jamie. I love him.
Oh boy.
In the ship, the Doctor questions Baylan as to where they got their radioactive materials when they built the bomb. Baylan says it was the other side of the planet. Ah, yes, okay. Why are the Dominators drilling here, and why are they drilling in this pattern of four in a square with one in the middle? Toba enters with the rest of the prisoners. He demands to know where Jamie is and states he will kill each of them one by one until they tell him. He kills Baylan to prove his point. Next up is the Doctor.
Poor Baylan.
Poor Baylan.
Imagine if this had been, like, the second Doctor's regeneration.
Oh my god, that would have been embarrassing, wouldn't it?
Be awful, but also kind of funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just find that a little bit, again, lots of back and throwing, very little progression.
Yeah. I was watching the last episode, Sam came downstairs, and I said, all this in the last episode could have happened two episodes ago, quite easily.
Yeah, should have.
Mm.
Okay, episode 5, we made it. Rago stops Toba as he threatens the Doctor. Rago is furious that the drilling has stopped. He orders that the rockets need to be in place and commands their placement of the seed device. Rago recalls the quarks from searching for Jamie in order to continue drilling.
Yeah, Rago is very annoyed that Toba keeps, like, using these resources that they have for drilling in order to go and kill people. He's like, dude, we need to drill for this stuff more than we need to murder the natives. Because we're going to be murdering them all in, like, half an hour anyway.
Jamie and Cully are being chased by quarks across the Dulcian Plains. The quarks are closing in, but suddenly they withdraw. Surprised but relieved, Jamie and Cully decide to go back to the shelter. Once there, Jamie and Cully unblock the ventilation shaft and the periscope, then enter. Using the periscope, they see the Doctor and his colleagues are being led away by the quarks. Yep, that's our second colleagues of the day. They're being led away by the quarks, while another group of quarks are being ordered by Toba to continue the drilling. Jamie wants to rescue his friends because he's a perfect little boy. When Cully asks how he plans to do so, Jamie mysteriously picks up a sheet from the nearby bunk.
I love this.
Yeah. Toba begins the drilling. While being held captive with his friends, the Doctor sees Jamie approaching, brandishing a twisted up sheet. Jamie approaches a quark from behind and ties its feet together. The Doctor calls the quark over and it topples. Jamie sits on the quark while Cully covers it with the sheet. Their friends run off into the shelter. The quark's distress calls alert Toba, who stops the drilling again.
Yay!
And goes to investigate. He's enraged when he finds everyone gone. Yet again, he orders the quarks to search and destroy, but Rago immediately countermands this order and commands the quarks to continue drilling. Rago pacifies Toba by saying the Dulcians won't escape for long, as they will soon die with their planet.
Oh, man. This episode was, like, you know, it was pretty exciting. Should have happened an hour ago, but you know.
It's pulling together a lot of bits that they should have given us sooner as well. Under the ground, the Doctor and Jamie have overheard this worrying conversation between the Dominators. They relay this information to the rest. The Doctor has finally figured out what the Dominators are planning. Using the four outer drilling sites, they intend on firing four rockets into the centre of the planet and its molten core, thus creating a volcano. The middle borehole is for the seed device, which will explode in the centre of the volcano, destroying the planet and producing enough atomic energy for the Dominator ship to be fully powered. The only way to stop this is to defuse the seed device, but there's no way of reaching it.
Ooh.
Jamie comes up with a plan.
Yes!
Of course he does. That's my boy. Where they dig a hole from the shelter to the central bore and intercept the seed device when the Dominators drop it down.
The Doctor's like, oh, it's so simple, only you could have thought of it. I'm like, no, he's thinking
laterally.
No, that's
actually really fucking good.
He's thinking
quite
laterally.
Literally.
Yeah, literally laterally.
Worried about time, the Doctor starts construction on the hole right away. Lots of digging holes. He uses his sonic screwdriver to blast through the wall of the shelter in order to get them started, which is a great little line about using a screwdriver. Mm. I love it.
I love the screwdriver.
Yeah. Jamie and Cully offer to buy them time by going out and destroying some more quarks. The Doctor tells them to wait as he wants to see if he can create a weapon for them.
Mm.
Rago announces that the rockets are in place. Toba states that drilling will be finished on schedule. Using a medical kit he's found in the shelter, the Doctor has constructed a homemade grenade that Jamie and Cully can use against the quarks, which is very funny.
It reminds me of the thing where you put an Alka-Seltzer tablet in a film canister pot,
yep.
And like a drop, yep, of vinegar or whatever, and you put it upside down and then it explodes.
And then it...
We did that once at university in a workshop. And I said, oh shit, when it like went all the way up to the ceiling, and the instructor turned around and went, well, you can't use language like that when you're teaching. And I was like,
fuck,
I'm at university. I am in a room with adults.
You're not teaching.
Yeah.
Wow.
I've only sworn in a classroom twice.
Better than I would have done.
Both times, no child heard me, so it's fine.
Good. I used to work in a bookshop. And I definitely saw when I was on the kids' floor. And you get to a stage where you just don't care. Yeah. I like that job. That was good.
Does sound nice.
Once outside, Jamie and Cully make a beeline for the drilling site. En route, they use the grenades to destroy 3 more quarks, doing a great deal of damage.
Woo!
The destruction of the quarks registers in the Dominator ship, and Rago goes to investigate. Toba overhears the distress call of the quarks but decides to follow orders and continue drilling for the first time in his life. Using the periscope, Zoe sees that Toba hasn't stopped drilling. The diggers redouble their efforts. Toba berates Rago for not letting him destroy the prisoners when he had the chance. He informs Rago that the quarks are running out of power but have enough to finish the drilling. Jamie and Cully approach the main drilling port. They see that they need to stop the drilling.
The word drilling is losing meaning.
Drilling.
Semantic satiation. I've learnt that phrase from Ted Lasso.
Down in the shelter, the diggers are getting ever closer, getting ever closer to the drill shaft. They are shaken by a huge explosion. The drill has been knocked out of its hole.
Woo!
And a quark has been destroyed. Rago takes another quark with him in search of the vandals. Toba continues the drilling. As they run off, Jamie and Cully find themselves surrounded. They scarper up a hill, hoping the quarks cannot follow. Rago orders their destruction. The quarks warn their power is too low for accuracy, then fire. Cully is hit, but he's paralysed rather than killed due to the weak strength of the quarks' lasers. The quarks draw in. Juice time.
Good plan. Juice time. Juice time. Juice time.
All right. The diggers can hear the drill in the tunnel. They stop digging temporarily when Jamie returns with Cully. The Doctor says that Cully's paralysis will only be temporary. The drilling from above stops. They rush to complete the tunnel. Toba tells Rago that the drilling is complete before going to fetch the seed device. Jamie breaks through the shaft just in time. Zoe watches Rago drop the device into the shaft. The Doctor is able to catch it. His joy is short-lived when he finds the device sealed. He needs to get it off the planet. He sends Jamie and Zoe to the TARDIS and tells Kando and Teal to get the capsule. They will need to fly to the capital and inform their people that there will be minor volcanic disruption on the island. He then rushes off.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. See, again, if this has happened earlier, it would fit the flow better.
Yeah.
The lava flow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
the pyroclastic flow, if you will.
I will. Yeah, thank you. The Dominators begin their takeoff procedure while the remaining quarks board the ship. The Doctor sprints across the Dolcian terrain. He enters the ship alongside the last quark and places the device in the ship, behind the unsuspecting quark. he nearly gets caught in the doors as he exits the squeezer.
Yeah, because he was too busy being pleased with himself.
I can't blame him.
A running scene.
Minutes later, the ship takes off. Jamie and Zoe wait anxiously for the Doctor outside the TARDIS. He startles them by approaching from behind. The rocket explodes and the ground begins to shake. In the ship, Rago sees the device. He orders Toba to stop the countdown. Toba begins to argue and the ship explodes.
The Doctor has committed murder. Very powerful.
Only minor murder to stop more murder.
Yeah, still murder though.
Still murder, yep. Murder is murder. Mm. Regardless, he's very pleased with himself. Indeed. He reassures a still agitated Jamie that the planet is safe since the formation of the volcano will now only affect the island. The Doctor is horrified when he sees that volcanic lava is flowing towards them. Yeah,
Doctor, cut you realise that we're on the island. He goes, oh no!
So good. So good.
End of serial.
To remain in this universe, the creature would have to reverse its polarity.
So many great little moments in between so much and nothing.
Literally could have been two episodes, just episodes 1 and 5.
That would have been fucking tight.
You don't need episodes 2, 3, 4. If you're going to watch The Dominators, lads, just watch episodes 1 and 5.
Yeah, you'll miss the bit where Jamie throws rocks at robots, but you know.
Nothing else.
That's it. That's all.
And you'll save an hour of your life.
However, if you have an hour of your life to spend, go ahead. Have a time.
I mean, you could, or you could watch 2/3 of John Carpenter's The Thing.
That's also true.
Yeah, no, I wasn't the hugest fan of this one. You messaged me the night before that I watched it, and I was like, and you said, oh, it wasn't really my thing. And I was like, oh, okay, I hope that I like it. And then I didn't, and I was like, damn it, it's nice when we have different opinions. Makes a good podcast.
Yeah, hey, I think this is still going to be a good podcast.
Yeah, I think so too. Because we're naturally very good at podcasting.
We're very talented, clever and funny.
Yeah!
An apple a day keeps the... No, never mind.
I wasn't paying enough attention to have like detailed notes on this. I just think he seemed like he was having a good time.
Yeah, he got to do a lot of being smug and clever.
Yes.
Which, you know, always fun. I like your point here about he just wants a holiday and the universe just keeps conspiring against him. It's true. He just wants to sit on his little beach and not nearly be killed. And it's just like any episode of Star Trek when they start by saying, oh, we're going on shore leave, and you know they're not.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Sorry, I had my Tumblr dash open and I sort of clicked back over to it and there's just an image of a worm that has over 100 anuses.
like a doctored image or like, no, an like actual a, worm
a real kind of worm that just grows more and more anuses over time. I'm gonna send you the picture.
Holy shit, please do.
It's like the spiral plus the corruption.
Oh boy. God, I'm looking at hell.
Yeah, and then the next post down is two pictures of designing hands beyond human dexterity, which are hands where the fingers have been put in different places, and it makes me feel insane looking at it.
What the fuck are you following on Tumblr?
Just people! This person I followed literally 6 or 7 years ago because they made good Lord Peter Wimsey posts.
Okay, that's fair.
Now they mostly post
and I guess
you
wouldn't expect that to, yeah.
Such as worms with 100 anuses. Speaking of not that, though, I don't know, it's just... It's a pretty low-key episode on a character level. Like, it's not very much happens, Aim.
Yeah, it's not driven by our recurring characters. It's not... I think that's my struggle with it. It's not a driven plot.
No, it just kind of...
It was this happens and this happens and this happens rather than actions and consequences.
Yeah, and it all just boils down to not very much, which is a shame. Which is why it should have been a two-parter, and we wouldn't be so worried about it.
Yeah.
Him and Zoe sciencing is always good. And I liked when he went, and Jamie, you've got to be very, very careful to make sure that you throw this away before 10 seconds are over. And Zoe starts going, 6, 7, 8...
Doctor Who is a workplace comedy.
It is. And the workplace is the universe. I enjoy it. I'm glad to get some more science bickering, because obviously I've been consumed with engineering bickering with Paul Stamets and Jet Reno.
I love them.
I love them so much. So it was nice to get back to that.
Yeah. It was nice to see the sonic screwdriver.
Yes, and for it to blow things up. I thought that was good. I enjoyed the Doctor deliberately being bad at puzzles. And he went, oh dear me. Oh dear.
So good. I can see why Troughton liked this one.
Yeah, there's some fun stuff for him to do. It's just...
It's probably a really fun one to make as well behind the scenes.
Oh, probably,
there's so
yeah.
many different bits to play
Lots
with.
Lots of running about, being in the quarry, etc.
Yeah, the Doctor's good.
Yeah.
We like to.
We love Patrick Troughton.
He didn't get to play Here's the Recorder, but...
No, that is a shame. We do love his recorder. Ugh. But yeah, I mean... Let's talk about Jamie! Like...
I love him.
I love Jamie.
I have to go.
Now look, if you're going to be in trouble, you'll need me to look after you.
Me too.
But right. You don't understand.
He's just...
A perfect boy.
He's a perfect boy. He's a he's a grumpy little bisexual icon. He's very stubborn, which I enjoy very much. Just good stuff.
He's, yeah, he's very good on, like, every level I can think of.
He's a delight. And... He's so brave as well. Like, he's just a great character. Just the character of Jamie McCrimmon is genuinely inspired.
Mm-hmm. Strong agree. Mm. I think most of my favourite bits were seeing Jamie on screen and being like, I like him.
Yeah, he's got his vest on.
Mm. Even though they're on holiday.
Even though they're on holiday. Well, they can't take the kilt off because then I'll just be a bloke in trousers, as Fraser Hines would say. That's true.
Jamie throwing rocks at things is actually all I need in life.
Yes, he is doing guerrilla warfare, and he came from 200 years before guerrilla warfare was a thing, so... Actually, it might be 100
Powerful.
Years. When the fuck did Garibaldi help in Sicily?
You say this like
I know
history.
It's because I did it in year 12 history. It's to do with Palermo and this whole thing where they were fighting against the King of Naples or something. I don't really remember. I got a B in A-level history. I was doing decently.
Congratulations. I didn't take it at history at A-level. I should have, but...
It's my fave. The Doctor explains the nuclear volcano thing, and Jamie just says, well, we'll just have to stop them then.
Like, yeah, yes, we will.
Yeah.
That's the plan.
And then he comes up with the real plan, because he's so clever.
It's so good to see... It would be so easy to use Jamie as, like, a sort of... Not quite a stooge... But as like the comic relief for not being as bright. And they don't do that here, which is great.
They do it from time to time in just the kind of fish out of water Rip Van Winkle thing, but it's still good.
And he does that very well as well.
He does. And then obviously Zoe is cute as a button, smart as a whip. I did delete the wife segment on this one because I just don't think there's enough women.
There's not enough women with enough to do, but I think it's very obvious that we would both wife Zoe.
Yes, she is.
In a heartbeat.
She is beautiful, cute. She wears two great outfits. I love her Wheel in Space jumpsuit. It's so nice.
I want to wear it.
Yeah.
I don't think I would suit it, but I want to wear it.
I would love to be able to get away with wearing a boiler suit just every day.
Nothing is stopping you other than the lack of boiler suits in your wardrobe.
Yeah, exactly. There's one from Run and Fly that I want to buy so badly, it makes me cry.
Ooh. I bought some dungaree dresses from them recently and so good. So worth every penny.
When I have work again, I will be doing so.
Nice.
I did make a pair of dungarees, but obviously I did not have fancy 70s style retro floral corduroy, which is what the boiler suit is made out of.
That sounds so good. I love Run and Fly.
Yeah.
So this is now our fashion podcast.
Yeah. I think Zoe would really suit some Run and Fly dungaree dresses.
There's, they have one at the moment which is in like a space clip print bright primary colours.
Can someone do some fan art of Zoe Harriet wearing cute Run and Fly dungaree dresses?
That would be amazing.
I think it would be good. It would be very good. She's just so smart and she's so delighted by learning new things and she loves getting to exercise her brain and it's such a nice thing to once again have a female companion who is just unapologetically intelligent and gets to use her intelligence, much like my wife Barbara Wright and Susan, obviously, although Susan didn't get to do it quite so much.
No. Oh, I had half a thought there and it's run away from me.
Oh no!
I think it was mostly that I wish she'd be able to do more in this episode.
Yeah, she's sort of...
And be able to, you know, respond to stuff and instigate stuff.
Yeah, it's a lot. She does solve problems, but she doesn't get to cause problems on purpose.
And we know that she would.
And we know that she would. But yeah, it's an interesting one. I just love her.
So that's our companion.
That is our companion.
She's perfect.
Yeah, she is perfect.
On your knees, Doctor.
There's not like a huge quantity of gay in this episode, but obviously because because we have two and Jamie, the married ones. We have a lot of one particular type of gay content, which is those two being extremely married.
I think they're probably the most married Doctor companion.
Oh, absolutely.
I think they are more married than Ten and Rose.
Yeah, yeah. More married than I was about to say Five and Turlough just to piss you off. More married than Eight and Charlie. That's a deep cut.
Yep.
More married than Eight and Fitz? ?
Okay. Oh, okay.
I mean, you'd have to read more Eight and Fitz in order for us to make an assessment.
But... I would. But also, I want to see a multi-doctor to Jamie Eight Fitz.
Oh my god!
There you go. That's my mid-August present to you.
Oh my god, that would be so fucking
my
good.
Gift. Wouldn't it?
I don't know if Eight's ever met Jamie in the expanded universe. He should, though. He fucking should.
I think they'd just have a good time. I think they'd have fun.
Yeah, me too.
I think they'd be buddies.
They would. And then they would kiss. But yeah, as always, the clutching. They just grab each other's arms and get really, really close. And there's like 2 inches between their faces at all times when they're speaking.
Because they have to be that close. They're each other's emotional security blankets.
Exactly. Two freaks out when Jamie picks up the laser gun, and it's very funny. He's like, no, you can blow a hole in anything, in paper or card or metal.
Very, do not hurt yourself. I love you too much. Please don't be a dumbass.
Yeah. I also love them conspiring while the Dominator set up the tests, and then Two says something like, just act stupid. Do you think you can manage that?
So good.
Bitchy.
Yeah, I think... God, I wish we had the Highlanders.
Yeah, don't. They're gonna animate the Highlanders, and the issue is gonna be that Two and Jamie are gonna be stood on opposite ends of the screen at all times, and it'll be really uncanny.
Well, I mean, I've been considering a career shift at some point anyway. I might as well just learn to animate so I can ensure that doesn't happen.
Become like the...
I have no qualifications, but I have a lot of passion about these two.
Become a science communicator in that you communicate the science of how Two and Jamie need to be close together due to their, I don't know, magnetized cells.
They would die if they can't touch each other at any given
time.
Yeah,
exactly.
Because... Science.
Much like Barbara and Ian, they are like otters who have to hold hands so that they don't float away from each other.
I love otters.
Yeah. Also, speaking of gay people, but on the opposite end of the spectrum from love to hate, we have Toba and Rago, who are hate fucking the night away.
And neither of them enjoy it, but they can't stop.
Yeah. Yeah. They're like, God, I hate this man so much. Why do I want to fuck him so bad? And like, Toba is there, like, Rago, you want to fuck me so bad, it makes you look stupid. It's very fun. They just, the whole time they're on screen, every time they speak to each other, they're like, oh, Rago, I can't believe I have to communicate with you every day. So funny. So funny.
They're objectively awful, but they're fun to watch.
Yes, exactly. I'm making you say the last point.
Oh, cool, sorry. Cully and Zoe double act is their Malumma Waloa solidarity.
Yes, we did kind of mention this, but it's just like Cully is gay. He has disappointed his father by being gay, so now he acts out. And
Zoe's a lesbian.
Zoe is a lesbian, and they are hanging out, and Cully brings Zoe to have a new outfit. Another time that this happens...
They would wingman each other.
They would. Another time that happens is in The Invasion, where Isabel and Zoe meet, and Isabel is like, oh, Zoe, you're very pretty. Would you like to model for me? And then she gives her, like, a sparkly catsuit. It's great.
That sounds perfect.
Possibly, maybe she's already wearing the sparkly catsuit, and Isabel gives her a feather boa. Either way, Zoe and Isabel are dating. That is beside the point.
That's a different story entirely.
It is a different story entirely. But yeah, Cully and Zoe... have a great double act, and honestly this serial was surprisingly gay given that we both didn't really like it, but the gay stuff was good. We enjoy it.
I mean, there's more than most episodes that we've discussed recently.
Yeah,
which is nice. Yeah. The themes aren't gay, there's no queering storytelling,
but there
it's
is
very
just being
love.
Yeah. Speaking of something that I love, though, I love that the Dulcian costumes are GNC as fuck.
You're one of these television chaps, then?
I am no sort of chap, sir.
Fucking hell they are. They're so good. I want them. I want them so much.
It's like Cully's,
where do I get the
Cully's
dress?
Fucking scrambling up these hills with his arse hanging out of this toga.
It's very, again, there's quite a lot of like world building here that is quite like innovative for alien worlds.
Yeah.
Based on other contemporary stuff, which is really
kind of reminds me of the Greeks. Like the ancient Greeks as a society.
Oh, not the alien Greeks.
No, not the alien Greeks.
Okay. Not this time.
No. I like your reaction note here.
Who is this man? Where do I get his dress? He's just an icon in many ways. Oh, and having robots with a female voice actor. Always good. Should happen more. Shocking that it doesn't. In the year of our Lord, whatever year it is.
Yeah, it's interesting. Because obviously the Quarks do not have gender. So instead of thinking, well, it's not got gender, so we'll get a man to do it, they've got a woman to do it, and she's pretty good.
Yeah, she's... It's just a refreshing change of pace.
Yeah. And then, you know, the Quarks may not have had a very long life on screen, but they had a fucking long one off screen, let me tell you that.
All right, shall we quickly go behind the scenes before we get...
Oh, no, I know, lives? I know. But yes, let us go behind the scenes, and then we can criticise the episode.
It's not... Hey, that's what we've been doing for the last hour.
Oh, I know.
Today's science fiction so often becomes tomorrow's science fact.
I'm fully lying down now. I've given up on sitting up.
I have to sit on my desk chair because of my setup, and I want to curl up.
Yeah, I don't have a desk anymore, so
fair.
I need to buy like a folding one.
Rather than doing more research into the Dominators, I decided I need to rearrange my entire room, which includes moving the bunk bed.
Oh, nice.
So I did that, and now my back hurts.
See, this is your reattaching the inlet hose.
Yeah, it's really nice. And now I can now walk through my room.
That's good.
The bar is low.
Yeah.
Anyway, behind the scenes. So this was one of Patrick Troughton's favourite serials, and he requested a showing of The Dominators at his birthday party shortly before his death in 1987. Which is, I just love the idea of old Patrick Troughton being like, it is my birthday and I shall watch my favourite classic Who story. God damn it.
Yeah. Did he get to see it before he died? I know it was at the convention that he died at. He was supposed to see it. Okay, his birthday was planned for Saturday evening. The birthday party was planned for Saturday evening and he died on Saturday morning.
Oh no, Patrick.
Patrick. It is very sad.
It's very sad. It's also very iconic. But also, like, imagine watching Doctor Who with Patrick Troughton. Just, like, the little anecdotes and commentary he'd add.
Just how fucking good he would have been on DVD commentaries.
Ugh, we were robbed. We need to figure out how to communicate with the dead specifically for DVD extras.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. We can get...
That's the only reason.
We can fucking get the stone tapes, guys. And we were like, look, we need to talk to the dead. Can you help us out, please? Can you find a psychic impression of Patrick Troughton anywhere around here?
Oh, he's been on enough quarries.
Yeah.
They have soft stone.
Yeah.
Limestone's good for this.
Fine.
The writer's credited as Norman Ashby, which is a pseudonym for Mervyn Haseman and Lincoln Henry. Script editor Derek Sherwin also had a significant input to the writing of episode 5. Haseman and Lincoln's decision to use a pseudonym appears to have been made at a late stage, as the existing camera scripts for the story bear their own names, and the name Norman Ashby is a combination of their mother-in-law's names. There you go, that's the story. And Jelly Babies, which are more usually associated with the Fourth Doctor, make their Doctor Who debut as the Doctor eats some from a bag while waiting in the transport capsule.
Ah... I did not realise that. Probably because I was very busy doing the washing up.
Yeah, that's... I also didn't clock it, but I thought it was worth mentioning. So yeah, that's all
I've
got. I did do my usual bit of, like, scouting for it, but there wasn't
I also
much.
Saw that the... as of 2020, this is the longest season opener, which shocked me because I would swear on the Bible that Spearhead from Space is 6 episodes, but it is not.
No, I think it's...
It's 4.
I think it's 4.
I've thought my whole life
Pretty
it
sure
was 6 episodes.
A lot happens in it. In 4.
Insane. I also have Inside the TARDIS, The Worlds of Doctor Who open.
Go on.
So it says that there's something called the threat and disaster narrative predominated in Doctor Who during the late 1960s. And there was an attempt during the 6th season in 1968 to 1969, produced by Peter Bryant and then Derek Sherwin, with Sherwin and Terence Dix as story editors, to reintroduce a greater level of narrative variation in line with earlier seasons. The Dominators, for example, overlaid its familiar narrative of resistance to totalitarianism with an allegorical dimension that was explicitly anti-pacifist. The cruel Dominators, masters of the Ten Galaxies, and their deadly robotic servants, the Quarks, invade the peaceful planet of Dulcis, a society of total pacifists, in order to exploit its natural resources for their war effort. The Dulcians, who have rejected war and violence, are unwilling to resist and unable to comprehend that the Dominators are not reasonable like themselves. The message is unequivocal. Pacifism is not a practical answer to aggressors, and resistance is preferable to oppression. Another attempt to vary the content was the Crotons, and I'm just not convinced.
Fair.
Apparently, the Crotons has a number of similarities to a 1967 Star Trek episode, The Apple. So I'm excited when we get there, I guess.
I'll have to rewatch that one.
Yeah, I haven't watched The Apple in a long time. Is that... Which one's the one where they erase Uhura's brain? There is one where they do that and it's fucked up.
Yeah, I remember that, and yeah, it's bad.
Yeah. At least Doctor Who didn't do that.
No, we'll all go, except Miss Shaw.
Oh, just a minute, I'm not going to miss all...
No, Miss Shaw.
Have you never heard of female emancipation?
Liz, this time I think he's right.
I mean, I've already mentioned that the Dominators look like armadillos, so that's a given. I hope that anyone who didn't watch the episode has had the armadillo image in their entire head.
Yeah, it's very important. I think if they made it now, they might actually be armadillo aliens.
Armadalians.
Yes! Like, can you imagine?
Thank you.
I want an armadillo alien quite badly, and I feel like I can see one in my brain that they've had. But I might be just thinking about the Zygons, I'll be honest. Like, oh no, you know what I'm thinking about, and this is going to really tickle you. You know what I'm thinking about?
Yeah.
I had a very specific image in my head.
Go on.
It's Mr. Be-
go on!
It's Mr. Beaver from the BBC Narnia adaptations.
Oh, boy!
It's like, I have such a specific image in my head of this guy who's like got his fingers together and he's got a weird nose. And then I went, oh my god, it's Mr. Beaver. It's Mr. Beaver.
Fuck.
I think he should have been a Dominator. Just Mr. Beaver and Mrs. Beaver, the Dominators. Oh my god.
That would be really funny. That'd be the crossover we never knew we needed.
Yeah. You have something where you've asked, is this anything? And I think it could be something.
Okay. So it's the start of season 6, which ends with the epic, the War Games. So this is one to revisit when we get to our War Games miniseries, because it's 10 fucking episodes long. You do not need a 5-hour podcast episode about the War Games. You can have several shorter ones instead.
Very excited.
But does this story introduce themes which are revisited at all in the War Games or throughout the rest of the season? So not develop that idea, but themes of war and pacifism and colonialism seem pretty explicit.
I think it could be. And I haven't watched War Games in about 5 years, possibly longer.
It slaps.
It does slap. It fucks.
I think it was more like having the war museum and war iconography as well was what set that thought off.
Yeah, it's definitely, obviously the themes in this, as far as I can tell, we've got colonialism and empire as a negative force for bad, which, thank you, base Doctor Who.
Yeah.
But then also war as a potentially as a force for good, which is not based. And then the ongoing impact of the Cold War and Hiroshima and Nagasaki in the 1960s, which again is like, war is not good.
War is...
I can understand...
Here at Reversing Polarity, we do not endorse
yes,
war.
I think I can understand kind of the attempt at saying sometimes there is aggression which cannot be responded to with nothing. But that does not mean that the only response is violence.
Yeah, and it does not mean that the lack of violence is always a bad choice.
Yes, exactly. Sometimes, you know, I mean, I've just been watching a lot of fucking Star Trek, haven't I? So at this point, we're like,
you?
Have a peaceful discussion with them. It's fine. Go to Babel and have a neutral visiting place. But no, I think that it's very much obvious that it is about how you shouldn't go somewhere, exploit the locals, take all of the resources, and then irradiate it. Like, it is saying something which is, you know, lefty, which is always nice, but...
And it's also not said well.
No.
As an allegory, it doesn't work because the pacing's off, the messaging is off, the sympathy
everyone
is off.
In it is white. I don't know. It's just...
But at least the robots are voiced by women.
That's true. God.
Yeah, we'll take what we can get.
Yeah, the atomic thing where they did one bomb test and were like, we cannot ever do this again, is good. I think that's like, that shows a strength of character to the civilization that the show does not seem to understand. To be like, oh, they were just scared of this one bomb test. It's like, yeah, because it was devastating.
Yeah, understandably.
And it completely ruined this island. They call it the island of fucking death. Come on.
Yeah, so we can always touch that on when we get to the war games.
Yeah.
It might be fun as we get through the series to do a few more specials when we have watched full series.
That'd be good, like a retrospective.
Yeah. And the other thing that there's a bit of Radio Times to feel, which... For the planet has been taken over by the cruel dominators and their deadly robots, the Quarks, who perhaps the most frightening enemy the Doctor has ever encountered. Which got me thinking, did they want to make Quark merch? Was somebody sitting in the BBC offices hoping the Quarks were going to be the next Daleks?
Literally, yes.
Yeah, I connected the dots.
My understanding, right, is that the writers of the serial were mad because the Quarks didn't end up making very much money from toy sales.
Jeez, I mean... They could have written a better episode.
Yeah, it's a shame because I really want a toy Quark. Can you imagine how cute that would be?
You can make one.
Yeah.
Get a little matchbox, cover it in foil.
I'm Googling Doctor Who Quark toy, but then it's going to come up with... Oh no, there we go. There's one from the Eagle Moss collection. But I want one where the arms
like
move.
I'd like to congratulate us for getting through an hour and a half through recording without talking about our favourite Ferengi barkeep. Mm,
yeah.
So, good job, I even
have a mug that says Quark's Bar in it. Quark's Bar, fuck.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, that's why I said Quark's a couple of times, because I was thinking about our favourite Ferengi barkeep.
I finished... This has got nothing to do with Doctor Who.
Okay.
I finished reading the book that Andrew Robinson wrote about Garrick. It's so fucking good. It absolutely slaps. And there's a bit towards the end where it talks about Garrick being abandoned on Terraknor and, like, his work with Quark to build his business. And it's really heartening.
Extremely exciting stuff.
So good. That's got fuck all to do with Doctor Who.
Oh my God, did you know that there's, a Doctor Who museum in London?
I didn't.
There's a Doctor Who...
We must
There's
go.
A Doctor Who shop that has, like, a museum attached to it. What the fuck?
We must go.
Walk around.
Walk around
the console from the 1989 Doctor Who stage play, The Ultimate Adventure. Yes, please.
Yes, please.
Oh my God.
Oh God, yes. That sounds amazing.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Anyway.
Well, I'm free whenever for that.
But yeah, I'm so fascinated by the ongoing attempts to do the new Daleks because Terry Nation wouldn't let them use the Daleks as often because he wanted to do his own thing with
them. Well, it makes so much sense when you consider...
Oh, no, it absolutely does. Like, they had the Vord very, very early on.
I wish that the Vord had become more of a beloved monster.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I want more paper doll Vords falling in the acid. The Mechanoids from The Chase... The War Machines, the Chumblies, of course, from Galaxy 4.
God, imagine the War Machines.
Yeah.
Just
the Cybermen. Cool. Just the Cybermen as a concept.
Cybermen's an obvious one.
Although that's more that you can dress up as one quite easily, because you need a pair of tights and some wellies. at least the very first ones. Maybe like a collapsible box to put over your chest. Can you tell I've been thinking about Mondasian Cyberman cosplay for many years?
Yes, I can. Ice Warriors?
They hadn't... I guess Ice Warriors by this point. I think the Ice Warriors are fucking incredible, obviously. I don't know whether they had a lot of... I don't know whether they had a lot of toy sales for the Ice Warriors. The Yeti.
Ugh, the Yeti. I want a plushie Yeti.
Yeah. But yeah, I find the commercialization of Doctor Who really interesting. Because obviously in New Who, like, back in 2006, if you went into Toys R Us, there were hundreds of Doctor Who toys. You could not move for Doctor Who toys. Whereas now it feels like they're merchandising it in a really different way. Like comics mostly and books again. Mm. Like it's the 90s.
I wonder if that's also like offsetting costs.
Yeah.
And... I don't know if you see this on your Twitter feed. I see it all the time. People posting like pictures of the Doctor Who segment in Forbidden Planet.
Yeah.
And how small it is. And I'm like...
You guys need to go to the television and movie store. Because every
get
single
all the copies
one,
of the Twin Dilemma,
every single one is
science.
Full of Doctor Who merchandise because it's all remaindered from like the past 5 or 6 years. And they've got all,
which
of
means
it.
It's going to be a butt turn.
Yeah, there's a lot of it.
I love remaindered shops.
Yeah, and I know that obviously B&M is doing like these Doctor Who model sets, but it's not for kids anymore. And I think that's sad. Come on, guys, toys are for children. Like we're allowed to use them as adults, but like toys are for kids.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. It would be nice to see, I don't know, like more action figures of 13 and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know enough about the current toy markets and what the kids are into.
I feel like I saw someone on Twitter make a thread about it a while ago. It might have been Will, but I'm not 100% sure. That was just about how the toy market works just of all toys, like licensed toys. I think it's been declining because people don't have money. Like, after the recession, it went into a pretty sharp decline, which is also
massively.
Why Toys R Us shut. Which I just find quite interesting. Obviously, if you go into, like, the entertainer, there's a lot more toys, but there's often, you know, the surprise bags, which are, like, a fiver each, which is, you know, it's
toys
ludicrous for what's inside it, but it's also cheaper than a normal toy. So, they're more popular, I guess.
Yeah, and again, like, dispensable income.
Yeah.
I also think the shift to digital has been a big one.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, people are more likely to spend money on digital content or games, or if you spend a lot of money to get a Switch, for example. Why would you then spend smaller bits of money if you don't have it when you could add to what you already... I don't know.
Yeah.
People still play Magic the Gathering, though.
They do.
I don't know what that has to do with anything. I was like, what still happens?
People still collect Pokemon cards. Yes, they do anymore. Still collect Pokemon cards, Aim. I've had to separate so many fucking arguments about Pokemon cards. Oh my god. Schools have had to re-ban Pokemon cards.
Really?
Where they're like, stop bringing in Pokemon cards. It's been 20 years.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
I remember my school had to ban Beyblades.
Oh yeah, we banned Beyblades, we banned Bulldog, we banned Yu-Gi-Oh, we banned Atactics. We banned Heroclix, which I think is a different thing. It's been a while. We banned
My brother was into those.
Sabutio. My school didn't let anyone do anything fun, basically. Scooby-Doo's, all sorts. Remember Scoobies?
Like the little braiding things?
Yeah, the little braiding things.
Yeah.
I could only ever learn two knots on it. I could only ever do the straight one or the one where it like spiraled round.
Yeah, I've definitely made quite a lot of those in my time. But yeah, I think that's our very short critique section.
Well, we talked a lot about toy sales. So, I mean, when I'm editing this, if I find a good article about it, I'll try and attach. Like, I think that there is a link between the recession and the lack of Doctor Who toys rather than Doctor Who somehow being less popular.
I think there's also in the years 2020 and 2021.
Yeah. There's a reason people aren't going to toy shops.
Yeah, but also, like, because of that, people aren't going to be making the sort of physical goods that you would otherwise impulse buy.
Yeah.
Gift giving has been very different. And also, the fucking... Even before Ever Given got stuck in the Suez Canal, there was a little bit of a global issue getting places from everybody.
God, I wish that they got stuck again. That would have really made my fucking day.
I was
day.
Rooting for it. When I heard it got all the way through, I was like, I'm just going back to bed.
Yeah, what's the point?
Let me get this straight. A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard, it can move anywhere in time and space?
Yes.
Quite so.
But that's ridiculous.
I've decided to talk about the Quarks, because we're never going to get another opportunity to talk about the Quarks. And they were fucking everywhere in the TV comic. TV comic was a magazine that ran... I'm Googling this. A magazine that ran from 1951 to 1984. It was a comic book magazine, and it had 1,700 issues. It had...
That's a lot of issues.
The very first issue had Muffin the Mule, Larry the Lamb, Prince Valiant, all kinds of things. Larry the Lamb is, like, my gran's favourite childhood television programme. When we went to visit her a couple of weeks ago, she finally decided to turn out her VHS tapes of the 1970s TV show, which I recently Googled and, like, has never been uploaded to the internet. I'm like, guys!
Do it!
But yes, there was, it ran for 1,700 issues, and it had a very, very significant amount of Doctor Who comics from, Doctors 1 through, I believe, 5, although I think possibly at that point they'd split Doctor Who off into TV Action, which was a different comic. But there was a lot for the first and second Doctors. The first Doctor had his companions John and Gillian Who, his grandchildren, who reappeared in a 8th Doctor Who magazine comic, which was really fucking sad. Jesus Christ.
Okay.
I don't remember very much about it, but it's just like he wakes up from this lovely dream about them and they like dissolve into nothingness and you're like, oh my god.
Oh my god.
It was sad. Also, TV Comic had some Star Trek comic strips for a little while, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I've read about them in my oral history of Star Trek.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so the Quarks, we have... The Quarks were dangerous enough that the Doctor was forewarned so that he could place John and Gillian Hu in a safer location rather than meet them. Quarks, who operated independently from the Dominators, made use of Quarkcraft and ray guns separate from their inbuilt weaponry. I don't know how, because they don't have thumbs. On several occasions...
I love the idea of, like, this being, like, cross-stitch and...
Yeah!
weaving.
And... Yeah. Yeah. On several occasions, the independent Quarks used giant wasps to cover for their limited agility and as their servants, because wasps are known for being agile. That's one thing we know about wasps, is that they can do, they can really, they can
do loop-de-loops.
They're really dexterous creatures. The Seventh Doctor once described a specific weakness the Quarks had. According to him, they were effectively allergic to leptonite crystals. If they came within half a mile of leptonite, they would explode. Which is really useful, I suppose. The Dominators took the Quarks to Earth in the 1950s to try and enslave the human race. They used the Quarks to stun anyone who discovered them earlier than intended. The Quarks and the Dominators were defeated by the Tenth Doctor.
Nice.
Jack Harkness referred to rebel Quarks in a report on the Vesper form, which is the big wasp monster from The Unicorn and the Wasp, revealing rumours of the Quark-Vesper form war.
Ooh.
Ooh. That's from one of the Torchwood case files, I think. In 1971, when the Doctor invented the Martha series of houseworker robots and sold them to an American company, the Quarks waited until they were widespread across the country and then turned them against humanity. This was intended as a prelude to their invasion, but they were routed when the Doctor reprogrammed the Marthas to engage the Quark armies. In 1984, slave Quarks were part of a failed Dominator secret invasion of Earth. Under Iceland, Major Whittaker's unit forces destroyed them. As part of a failed Dominator invasion of Gallifrey, Quarks flooded the capital. They were fought by Leela and K-9 Mark I, who destroyed 39 Quarks between them. Though the Fifth Doctor would claim that there was never any serious risk of us being conquered, one of the Quarks was fitted with a bomb which caused severe damage to the capital, necessitating the construction of a replacement building. And then our short trip is TV Comic Insanity from issues 894 to 898, I think, which is Martha the Mechanical Housemaid.
What the actual fuck is happening?
Martha the Mechanical Housemaid is a TV comic story. I couldn't actually find a copy of this. I just need to talk about it.
Okay, so this is why you didn't explain the fucking Doctor inventing the Martha series of houseworker robots earlier then. What the fuck is happening?
It's a TV comic story featuring the Second Doctor and Jamie McCrimmon. As was true of the other stories in the TV comic run of Second Doctor stories, it depicts the Doctor as a person quite willing to enjoy fame and even fortune. During the story, the Doctor appears twice on American national television and is very clearly trying to make a profit out of a new robot that he has invented. By the conclusion, the Doctor is portrayed as a globally famous individual who is being drafted as a possible candidate for the office of President of the United States.
He doesn't have a US birth certificate.
He does not. Although seemingly inconsistent with later depictions of the Doctor as a more private individual uninterested in making money, it can be viewed as a partial explanation of why the Time Lord's sentence of the Second Doctor in the War Games includes forced regeneration. In that televised story, the Doctor objects to being exiled on Earth by saying, "Besides, I'm known on the Earth, it might be very awkward for me." However, as seen on television, the Doctor really only seems to know a handful of people on 20th century Earth, and most of them work for UNIT.
Beautiful.
Usefully, Martha the Mechanical Housemaid and other TV comic stories like Action in Exile advance the notion that he is an actual celebrity on Earth, which makes better sense out of Troughton's War Games line. When Troughton regenerated and they knew John Pertwee was going to be the new Doctor, they did a bunch of comic strips without knowing anything about the new series, just with John Pertwee as the Doctor.
With his face.
Yes, exactly. The Doctor invents a mechanical housemaid called Martha, and landing in Central Park in New York City 1971, goes to a company called Inventions International, who are interested in modern inventions.
Sounds sketchy as hell. Yep.
There, Jamie and he meet American tycoon Mr. C.G. Slattery, who promises them that 1 million homes will have Marthas installed within a few weeks. They have hit the big time!
Oh my god!
The Doctor appears on television to promote Martha, and within a few weeks, hundreds of thousands of Marthas have been sold. However, the Quarks are watching and plan to override the frequency on which the robots operate, gaining control. Once the robots have wreaked havoc, the Quarks will move in and take over. The signal is sent and the Marthas go berserk, turning on their human masters. Impervious to bullets, the robotic reign of terror continues.
What?
The Doctor guesses what has happened to his invention and that the Quarks are behind it. Returning to Central Park, he plans to boost his own signal and regain control of the Marthas, but already the Quark fleet is moving in towards America.
This is everything and... Yeah, this is everything.
The Doctor boosts his signal and reclaims control of the Marthas. Meanwhile, a Quark ship touches down on a farm close to New York. Other ships land close to all major cities. The Quark invasion begins, but the Doctor has a plan and sends a special command to the Marthas, ordering them to attack Quarks on sight. The battle between Marthas and Quarks rages all across the United States, assisted by the armed forces wherever they can help. Badly beaten, the surviving Quarks retreat to their saucer and return to their home planet, yet again swearing revenge against the Doctor. The Doctor, meanwhile, is hailed as a national hero and again appears on television. This time, they want to elect him president. And this is like every
oh my God.
Fucking TV comic summary is like this. It's insane. I need to know who the writers were, and I need to send them like an edible arrangement in heaven, because I assume they're all dead by now.
That's very fair. They deserve it. I wish that we'd watched that instead of The Dominatrix.
Yeah, can you imagine how good Martha the Mechanical Housemaid would be as a serial? Just the Doctor invents... Invents a helper robot.
Invents a house.
And it goes wrong.
And
it goes on television. It would be very, very good. Yeah, that's my Expanded Universe segment for this week.
Thank you so much.
I love the Quarks in the Expanded Universe where they went, well, we can't be arsed with the Dominators because we've had to draw more people, but the Quarks are super easy to draw, so let's just do loads of those.
Can't blame them at
Indeed
all.
Indeed not.
All right, it is rankings time.
Yes.
So I think my X of the week
is
going to have to be visual gag of the week being Jamie blowing up a beach ball. I don't know why, that just like warms the cockles
of
my heart. It's so good.
My X of the week is, of course, puzzle of the week for putting shapes in holes. Very
Amazing.
Difficult puzzle. I can see why the Doctor found it so tricky.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
Arthur Cox, who played Cully, was in Have His Carcass with Michael Troughton, who is also Patrick Troughton's son, to be clear. Mm-hmm. He played Pilot 4-0 in the Blake 7 episode Children of Auron, which is a degree of 2. Now, the important thing is I've put a little smiley face next to Have His Carcass. Would you like to know what Have His Carcass is, Abe?
I'm a little bit trepidatious, but go
it's
on, tell me.
It's Dorothy Alsayer's mystery.
There's going to be that or something about, like, violating a corpse.
Yep. Well, it is the second Lord Peter Wimsey and Harriet Vane mystery that was made by, I think, the BBC in the 80s. And it is about Harriet Vane is on holiday and she discovers on the beach a corpse which is then washed, not washed away by the tide, but all of his blood is washed away by the tide. So they can't tell exactly when he died after that point. And then Peter turns up and is like, I hear you've been investigating a murder without me. And then they bicker their way through the case. It's very good.
Oh,
but Arthur Cox plays old Salcom Hardy, who is a newspaper journalist, who is a great character, old Sally Hardy. And I thought I vaguely recognised him, and it turns out it was from this, from 20 years afterwards. So
beautiful.
Yeah, it's a good one. I like Have His Carcass. And then unrelated, but Malcolm Terrace, who played Etnin, who I think is one of the Dalsians in the council, was in The Horns of Nymon as the co-pilot.
Nice. That was a fun one. I like.
I think he's the one who goes in and goes, "You despicable worms," and then walks back out again.
Beautiful. Yeah. All right, out of 5,
yeah. I'm gonna give it
probably.
I'm gonna give it
2.2 drills.
I'm gonna give it 2 homemade survival kit grenades out of 5. It's like fine.
Okay.
It's
not
fine.
Objectively awful, it's just...
It's boring.
I can imagine some people watching this and being like, no, this is my jam, and, you know, all power to you.
I think if I was watching it week to week, it would be less objectionable. But watching it all in one go is tough.
That's very fair. The Netflix effect.
Yeah.
Where does it fall in our overall ranking?
Also, I didn't read the novelisation, but I do plan to, because it's by Ian Marta, and he does good novelisations.
Hello, Peter Cat.
It's going to go near the bottom. Yeah. I think I would even put it below the Sontaran experiment.
Not below the Twin Dilemma.
The Sontaran experiment has the advantage of being short, And the Dominators has the advantage of not being complete dog shit like the Twin Towers.
That's very fair. That's very fair. All right.
I will look up the ranking. Where do we think the Dominators is going to go? I'm reckoning low, because Jesus Christ.
I reckon, yeah, 148.
Aren't you 180? Let's see.
That's fair.
191!
Oh boy!
Is below the Space Museum and above Fear Her and Paradise Towers.
I mean, I actually like Fear Her, so...
That is a hot take. I liked it at the time, but I still also found the ending so secondhand embarrassing that I had to, like, leave and hide my face. When he's, like, throwing the egg into the Olympic torch or whatever, very strange.
I think I vibed with it. I haven't really watched it in many years. So, but yes, that is our episode on the Dominators.
Excellent stuff. By which I mean our episode, not the Dominators.
Do you want to outro us?
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Reversing Polarity, a Doctor Who fan cast by two very tired lesbians. If you would like to rate and review us on iTunes, that would really help us, you know, boost the show's profile, so to speak. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, you can at PolarityPod or on Tumblr at polaritypod.tumblr.com. You can follow me at DotSayers either on Twitter or Tumblr and AIM at AIMTellsStories, that's AYM. And please do join us next time. We'll be joined by a very special guest to discuss the Fifth Doctor story, Earthshock.